corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free. Is there a new 9/11 in the offing, with up to hundreds of thousands to be killed? We'll be investigating in this edition, also analysing the fallout from Israel's invasion of Lebanon and updating on our 9/11 investigation in the forum.
Would you do me a favour and push me on to the next level?
And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thanks also to our sponsor, neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Please, please do not support the pharmaceutical industry when you can do it all with one natural organic product. Check that out at neemwell, that's neemwell.com, or email Kathy McMahon, K-A-T-H-Y, at neemwell.com. Hundreds of satisfied listeners agree. You won't be disappointed. And speaking of disappointed, do you remember that scene in the movie A Fish Called Wanda where Kevin Kline looks into the empty safe and he goes, "Disappointed!" The understatement of the year. Well, there's a lot of disappointed people in the New World Order following the attempted invasion of Lebanon by Israel. It hasn't worked out as they planned, folks, and the clearest sign of that is that the discussion at the moment is about the introduction of UN troops into the area. Now, isn't that a big climb down from the early talk of NATO intervening and placing troops on the Lebanon-Israeli border? Well, yes it is, and we'll be analysing that just now. We'll come later on to the terror threat, this one, from Alex Jones and others. Alex Jones is not the only one talking about a new 9/11, you know, but he is the one with the largest mouth talking about it.
And I'm here to tell you, there is a 90% chance we are going to see bone-shattering mega attacks in the United States, Canada, or England, or Israel. Could even be in Israel, but I think it's going to be, it could be both.
That's coming up. We'll get into that a little later in the show. But let's start with that devastating defeat for the New World Order project in the Middle East. Oh, what's that you say? I haven't heard about any devastating defeat for the New World Order and the G8. Well, duh, of course you haven't heard of it. Now, it all looks so promising on paper. The idea was to use some pretext to invade southern Lebanon, to drive back Hezbollah as far as the Litani River, and in the process to also inflict such severe civilian casualties on Lebanon that they would be crying out, along with the rest of the Arab world, for any kind of intervention to stop the slaughter, with the Israeli armed forces holding the upper hand. Well, that's not how it worked out. Yes, the early stages of the operation went well. That was the Air campaign, which inflicted those civilian casualties that we saw around the world. They were, as you may have read in the forum, and if you don't read the forum regularly, you should, but as I've written there, those civilian casualties were not accidental, they were deliberate, they were designed to get the world to cry out for an intervention in the Lebanon. Equally deliberate was the strike on a UN post, a UN post which had been there for 20 years, for crying out loud. A strike on that UN post by Israeli forces, once again designed to send a message. The message was, this is a dangerous area, not the place for UN troops, a place you need kick-ass NATO troops instead. So all of that was quite deliberate. Civilian casualties and the strike on the UN post designed to engineer the entry of NATO forces into the Middle East, which is a key goal of the G8. But from the beginning of that air campaign, it began to go badly wrong. First, it went badly wrong in the social arena. Maybe their psychological warfare consultants got it all wrong, but the idea was to inflame the people of Lebanon against Hezbollah, who had drawn down the wrath of the Israelis upon their country with the resulting devastation. Instead, what happened was that the people of Lebanon began to coalesce, began to reaffirm and solidify their national identity. The idea was to shatter that national identity. So exactly the opposite began to happen in the social arena. They were already in trouble there. But their military problems were the big ones. this is not the Yom Kippur War. This is not 1972 or 1983. This is 2006, and by 2006, every guerrilla force around the world who fights against an invading, occupying army has learned the lessons. They've learned the lessons of previous combats. And even analysts within the United Nations who were looking on at what was happening in southern Lebanon were amazed at the degree of preparation which had been put in by Hezbollah. Let me quote you from Timur Goksa, who served with the UNIFIL troops from 79 to 2003. He said of Hezbollah, "They have done incredible staff work." Do you hear that? Staff work. In other words, their officer corps responsible for the preparation for such an invasion. They've done incredible, it's just unusual to hear a so-called terrorist organization been described by somebody as they've done incredible staff work. Yeah, they've got an officer corps, the Hezbollah. Anyhow, I'm interrupting myself. They've done incredible staff work learning the lessons of guerrilla warfare down the ages and carrying out a very deep and accurate analysis of the Israeli army. And the first indication the Israeli armed forces had that they weren't dealing with a crowd of numbskull jihad-shouting hooligans was when they, after the initial airstrikes in southern Lebanon itself, close to the border, when they began to send in SWAT teams, special forces teams, to target places from which they could see Hezbollah rockets being fired. Hezbollah were way ahead of them. That when the Israeli special forces attacked those locations, Hezbollah were waiting for them with ambushes. Those rocket firings which had come from those areas were simply lures to draw Israeli forces in, and when the special forces came in, they were ambushed. Now that created a problem, because the idea was to drive back Hezbollah forces away from the border, and the further you could drive them back, the greater security you could give to Israel itself and prevent rocket strikes on Israel. Because the problem for the hard heads in the Israeli administration is the ordinary Israeli people, they don't like having rockets land in their towns and cities and villages. And there's only a certain amount of that they're prepared to put up with before they start saying, this is a disaster, you have to stop. Now they're in trouble. They've started a war and they're not driving back Hezbollah away from the border and thus ensuring Israel's security. Then what happened was they sent in tank units. They sent in ground forces with tank units. Unfortunately, the Hezbollah were using anti-armor missiles. They were using snipers. They were using roadside bombs, and they had an extremely complex system of bunkers and tunnels, and so they were capable not only of taking out Israeli tanks, but also taking out armored personnel carriers, and even using these rockets against ordinary ground forces. The result was a complete unmitigated disaster. The Israeli forces were simply completely unable to stop the massive amounts of rockets coming into Israel from southern Lebanon. And guess what? Guess what makes it even worse? What the Israelis knew and what quickly became apparent was that there was only a small number, perhaps no more than 1,000 Hezbollah fighters were put up against those Israeli forces in southern Lebanon. And there were thousands more in the villages ahead and in secret tunnels ahead. So Israeli forces knew that they would encounter, because of the operational problems they were having, severe losses if they attempted to progress. And so the entire project faltered. And what happened? Well, you've heard what happened. A UN force is to go in to southern Lebanon, not a NATO force, which is a disaster, because the engineering of a UN force into that area was a key G8 objective. And by the way, the Hezbollah were using quite an array of armaments. They were using, according to news reports, Soviet-built Sagar anti-tank missiles and the French Milan, and also US-built TOW anti-tank missiles supplied by Iran and Syria. Well, I mean, those Iranians and Syrians are terrible, aren't they? Hold on a second, though. Where does a Soviet-built Sagar missile come from? Well, I suppose it's Russia, isn't it, if it's Soviet-built. And where do you think a French Milan anti-tank missile comes from? Well, I suppose France, originally. And where do you think a US-built anti-tank missile comes from? Well, I suppose it might be the United States of America. Proving, of course, that if you live by the sword, you're likely to get your ass kicked by the sword. Anyhow, the G8 have not yet given up on the idea of getting NATO forces in. Well, how could that be? Isn't it a UN force that's going in? Well, yes, it's a UN force that's going in. But now the talk is that certain aspects of the military operations of a, quote, nominally UN force could be subcontracted to another multilateral force. In other words, it goes in as a UN force, but what it ends up being is it ends up being supplemented by aspects of NATO forces. So they haven't given up on the NATO angle yet, but they're fighting an uphill battle now as a result of the defeat of Israel in the invasion of Lebanon. Incredible, isn't it? That it ended up being essentially the Israeli government whose ass had to be saved by the G8 and by the UN in the negotiation of this ceasefire. So, well, anyway, in case this rough, quick overview of all this hasn't been enough to convince you of the scale of the disaster, let me just quote from PalestinianPundit.blogspot.com in terms of a scorecard of this venture into southern Lebanon. Did the Israelis manage to kill Hassan Nasrallah? Nope. Did they prevent missile firing on Israel in retaliation? Nope. Did they occupy the areas south of the Litani River? Nope. Did they push Hezbollah north of the Litani? Nope. Did they turn Lebanese and Arabs against Hezbollah? No. Did they destroy the military capacity of Hezbollah? Ha! No. Did they disarm Hezbollah? Well, forget all the talk about disarming Hezbollah. You hear that's just a sop in order to get the thing through. No. Did they demonstrate the decisive military capability of Israel? No. Did they demonstrate to the Arabs that resistance is futile? No. Did they strengthen their puppet regimes in Jordan, Egypt, and other... No, they didn't. Did they increase support for US policies in Lebanon and in the rest of the Middle East? No. Did they strengthen Israel vis-a-vis Syria and Iran and cow them? No. This was a complete and total unmitigated disaster, and it has implications. And what do we have just after the ceasefire? We had another disaster. It's been a bad few weeks for them, hasn't it? More in just a moment. I love these lyrics. You're working for the police and the private, the pirates and the pilots, fingerprinted, waiting for the train. The doctor, the writer, the hairdresser, felt up and fingerprinted, waiting for the train. This is Metric and Police and the Private. You're on the next level on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
Get straight, wait here while I try to find the exit sign. When will you stop asking strangers? No one wants what we want. Keep one eye on the door, keep one eye on the bag. Never expect to be sure. You're working for the police and the private, the pirates and the pilots, fingerprints and waiting for the train. The doctor, the writer, the hairdresser, felt up and fingerprints and waiting for the train. Lord, Lord, Milo, you're all losing love. Lord, listen, Milo, you're all missing mama. Lord, Lord, Milo, you're all losing love. Lord, listen, Milo, you're all missing something.
Lord, my Lord, you're all losing love. Lord, listen, love.
And you're very welcome back. You're on The Next Level on BreakForNews.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. Okay, so let's turn to what happened in the terror plot in the United Kingdom. We're not going to go into all the gory details because we've been through a lot of that and you've seen the reports on it. What we're going to touch on is how much of a disaster that turned into as well. And I can tell you, and I can tell them, why they got that so badly wrong. I'm not giving anything away by telling them. They know already now how they got that one so badly wrong. See, the plan was to have this tremendous victory over Hezbollah in Israel to show the determination of the so-called international community to stand up to terrorism. In other words, the determination of the G8 to continue the imperial expansion. And then to follow that up with a massive hype operation which would raise fears. And why are they raising fears? They're raising fears because they know. The research shows that in a climate of fear, people tend to vote more conservative. There you go. Simple equation. So it's worth 2, 3, 4, 5, 6% at the polls. So of course they're going to do it. So that's why they overplayed their hand. You see, if they'd kept a little more restrained in terms of the operation they put out, discovered a terrorist plot, arrested people, etc., etc., then that would have been fine. They could have got away with that, but it wouldn't have generated the necessary hype for the fear operation which was to follow. So instead of just arresting the guys and having it all low-key, they started grounding airplanes, shutting down air terminals. They started shutting down the whole system in the United Kingdom. And to the ordinary members of the public, it was a massive overreaction. They were desperately inconvenienced by all this. They didn't like it. And because it had been so overplayed, their ingrained suspicions, and believe me, the people in the United Kingdom are very suspicious, sceptical and distrustful, like you wouldn't believe, of the Blair administration. They don't trust a word these people say. Bear in mind, this is a country where well in excess of 90% of the people think that Diana was murdered. And they think that Diana was murdered by other factions within the British royal family and by British security forces. So these are not dumb people. They know the kind of stuff that goes down. They haven't translated that scepticism over what happened to Diana into scepticism, full scepticism, over the whole issue of terrorism and where it originates and who's really behind it. But boy, are they connecting the dots big time at this stage. Now, Cathy McMahon, I don't know if you can hear her typing in the background. She's so busy she can't come on air. I have to book her in advance, you see, to get her on air. But Cathy was monitoring the BBC website. So let me give you an idea of the kind of comments which were being made and the kind of balance there was in them. Here's one, typical of the kind of comment you would get, say, about 2 years ago on the BBC website from Julie in Suffolk, England. If these are the security levels needed to keep us safe, then we should have them in place all the time. I'd rather wait 2 to 3 hours for my flight and know I'm safe. And 2 people voted for that comment. Now, 21 people voted for this comment. Sounds to me like fake staged terrorism again to stir up fear in the general population and take away more of our basic freedoms. Or here's another one. Now, this I'm just trying to bring home to you quite the level of scepticism that has been generated in the United Kingdom. Here's another one, pro-government one, typical, as I say, of about 2 years ago. I'm very impressed with the police and security services. I hate to think what would have happened if they hadn't intervened. I think the disruption is not a lot to put up with considering the possible consequences if we didn't put these security measures in. I wonder who put that one up. It sounds so corny. I'd say probably a security operative. And it was voted for, Alison of Bristol, was voted for by 3 people. And 140 people voted for this one. Has anyone else read 1984 and its perpetual state of fear? That's from Obey in Coventry, recommended by 140 people. How about this one? Recommended by 351 people, this comment. Funny how this comes after Reid's speech yesterday. I bet that no one from the handful arrested will be charged. Funny how they know there's a threat when they've been monitoring it for months, and yet they have a scattergun approach in disrupting every airport. See what I mean, folks? Here's another one. Recommended by 172 people. Typical knee-jerk overreaction. There you go. That gives you an idea of what's going down. When you get that kind of comment on the BBC, for crying out loud, you can't get more middle-class than the BBC website, and you have those comments coming out where you have two people saying, well, yeah, we need these kinds of security measures, and you have 351 people saying, oh yeah, funny how this comes after Reid's anti-freedom speech yesterday. This is not going down well. This whole thing is going down desperately. It's been sold internationally very well by the media. But on the ground, in the middle class, in the great unwashed masses of the middle class in the United Kingdom, it's gone down like a lead balloon. And you can get all of those comments. We'll give you a link to that if you click on the photo that goes with this audio, or just go into the forum into State Terror section and take a look at the thread there on the mass murder air terror bid foiled. And you'll get those BBC comments. As I say, Cathy was monitoring the BBC forum, and that kind of comment continued for days on the BBC. Now, as I say, they were suckered into this overplaying their hand because of the fact they wanted to launch this whole new 9/11 is imminent fear psyop. They wanted to provide the fuel, the ammunition, for the likes of this guy, this one man walking big-mouthed, bad advertisement for conspiracy theories, who came out shortly after the 9/11 plot thing was uncovered with this pile of crap.
And I'm here to tell you, there is a 90% chance we are going to see bone-shattering mega attacks in the United States, Canada, or England. We're talking about the total end of America, total martial law. I've got to calm down. Hold on. Because we knew if we saw what's now happening, they were really going to do it. These murdering scum are really going to do it. Okay, right now, they're really going to do it unless we call into every radio, every TV show, unless we go out on the streets and demonstrate, unless we really get aggressive right now. I mean, it's simple. We've got to flood the internet, flood the message boards, get it out to everybody like we've never done before. This is Operation Expose the Government Terrorist, Op 2.
Bullshit. This is not Operation Expose the Government Terrorist. This is Operation Fear combined with Operation Discredit the 9/11 Movement. You getting it, folks? I mean, how fucking stupid did they think we are? Because this is exactly the thing that they pulled prior to the 2004 election. And one of the leading luminaries pushing that was Wayne Madsen at the time, and Alex Jones and others were in it as well, saying that the government are going to pull a terrorist attack, fake terrorist attack by Osama bin Laden, just ahead of the elections in order to steal the election based on security concerns of people and make them vote right-wing. Exactly the same. And did they, back in 2004, did they do that? No, they didn't. They just stole the election at the ballot box, as usual. Now, I'll get in more into the analysis of why this is not going to happen, but just reminding you that they pulled this stunt before. But Alex Jones isn't the only one at this. Larry Chin, writing in Online Journal, another disinformation outlet, is also pushing the 9/11 buttons. And guess what? It goes back to before the terror plot in the United Kingdom. It goes all the way back to the 5th of August, because on the 5th of August, none other than veteran Middle East correspondent Robert Fisk, yeah, you know who he is, that was the first time that it started. Robert Fisk wrote an article which ended with the enigmatic lines, "I fear there's another 9/11 coming." And I link to that too in the forum post that goes with this audio. The article was, "A terrible thought occurs to me that there will be another 9/11. This was on the 5th of August. And it was from Robert Fisk, who's another disinformation merchant. The idea of Robert Fisk is that he voices the voices of the voiceless, in other words, the Palestinians particularly, but always careful never to reveal the inner machinations of the G8 and the Anglo-American nexus in the Middle East. And there he is, prior, mind you, now prior to the so-called discovery of the terror plot. He's coming out saying there will be another 9/11. Within days, a terrorist plot is discovered in the United Kingdom, which is called another 9/11. And within a few more days, this Jones is ramping it up on his radio show that there's going to be another 9/11. So these are the disinformation merchants: Robert Fisk, Larry Chin in Online Journal, Alex Jones. But as I say, there is more to it than just that. What Alex Jones is also doing is he's laying, now he carefully covered his ass, if you listen to that radio broadcast, saying that if he gets it wrong, he's going to be attacked for having gotten it wrong. Well, of course he is, because what's going to happen when he gets it wrong, not if he gets it wrong, is that it will be written up in the media that this nutcase who thinks that the government was behind 9/11, was predicting a terrorist attack planned and conducted by the government just in advance of the elections. And of course it never happened, because you have these kind of nutcases out there all the time. His warning about the 9/11 comes just after the high profile of the LA symposium, at which Alex Jones featured and was the host of. So he's going to take down the whole 9/11 movement as a bunch of paranoid nutcases when this doesn't happen. That's the game that's being played. There you go. Alex Jones is playing to the game plan that you can see running through this from Robert Fisk prior to the terror plot. The terror plot itself hyped as another 9/11, and then Alex Jones kicks in. He is operating in direct concert with the propaganda campaigns of the G8. And it isn't the first time, because it was last year, just before I outed the whole CIA fakes, around August, around the same time a year ago, that Alex Jones picked up on a comment by Peter Power, who's a former member of the anti-terrorist branch in Scotland Yard. Peter Power, visor consultants, terror drills, etc. Another coincidence theory, conspiracy theory, which Alex Jones jumped all over, something that clearly had no basis, because it was a paper drill. It wasn't an active drill with staff on the ground all. It was a total bullshit story. The story was planted by Peter Power of Visor Consultants, former member of the anti-terrorist squad in Scotland Yard, and picked up by Alex Jones. That's the level of collusion that there is between Alex Jones and people like Peter Power, former member of the anti-terrorist branch of Scotland Yard. That's how close these people are. Of course, the collusion between Alex Jones and these people goes back all the way to his 25th of July 2001 warning of an attack on the World Trade Center. Advanced knowledge of the attack on the World Trade Center. Interesting that he makes his reputation on that warning, and he will destroy his reputation on this one. And they hope destroy the 9/11 movement along with him, because he's currently encouraging all of those who think that Alex Jones is on the right track on this one to flood the message boards, to flood the internet forums, to flood the inboxes of the television shows and television programs with this warning of an imminent 9/11 type event coming out of the 9/11 conspiracy theory movement, who will then be portrayed. They will have signed their own death warrants with those emails going out to the media, because that will just reinforce the perception, which has been carefully cultivated, that those who talk about the 9/11 issue are nutcases. Anyhow, there you go. That's what we're up against. No problem. We'll deal with them. We'll deal with all the disinformation merchants. After all that hype, maybe it's time to just chill a bit. We've got 5 kittens wandering around the backyard right now. So maybe that's an appropriate introduction for this one from Granddaddy, Where I'm Anymore. Meow, 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 meow. Have a listen. It's a great one. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. We'll be right back.
10 million pounds of plastic baby stuff there beyond the doors. Garage sale Sunday and I don't know. Thank you.
And you're very welcome back. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. And just picking up a final point on all of that 9/11 hype, considering the backdrop against which we're operating, where there is mass scepticism in the United Kingdom about the whole 9/11 terror plot, and considering that there's even more scepticism about 9/11 in the United States, a recent survey reported on in the New York Post, for example, found that 16% of Americans think that there were explosives in the World Trade Center towers, and that's what brought them down. And 54% of people in that poll said they were personally more angry at the government than they used to be. And the New York Post report said, and I'm quoting, "Widespread resentment and alienation towards the national government appears to be fueling a growing acceptance of conspiracy theories about the 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon." The killer figure was that 36% of respondents said it's very likely or somewhat likely that federal officials either participated in the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon or took no action to stop them. Now, Lee Hamilton was quoted in that report. He's the former vice chairman of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks, also called the 9/11 Commission. He said, "One out of three sounds high, but that may very well be right." So you just consider that. If you've got that level of scepticism about the whole war on terror stuff and suspicions about 9/11, which is an event that took place many years ago, and you carry out another terrorist attack, you're going to have the entire terror skeptic movement internationally on your ass from day one if you pull such an attack. And if there are innocent victims, those people are going to be fighting mad. And that's not what you want. You do not want 36% of the people in the United States going nuts because they think that hundreds of people have been murdered in a terrorist attack, or, to use Alex Jones' figure, hundreds of thousands, amended to tens of thousands, killed. Because it's more trouble than it's worth, folks. And anyway, you do not want to hype it up in order that you can invade Iran and or Syria. Get a grip. Invade Iran or Syria. This is a G8 New World Order structure which is currently bogged down in Iraq, deeply bogged down in Iraq, which is currently on the defensive in Afghanistan, and where Israel couldn't even take the space between the Litani River and the border, and they're going to attack Iran? Give me a break. With what? With what? Okay, suppose you fantasize that they're going to stage a huge terror attack and then have a mass mobilization, you know, where they would have a call-up and conscription into the armed forces, and you know, hundreds of thousands of people forced into the armed forces to fight a war. Fight a war with what? You need hardware to fight a war, and they don't have it. So, there you go. Bullshit. Anyhow, even as all that hype goes on, in the forum in breakfornews.com, we are continuing the 9/11 3i investigation. And already there are some very active threads there. We're looking at issues such as the tower collapses, the South Tower itself and why it fell first, the FAA response and the air response on the day. We're looking at the Pentagon issue. We're looking at Building 7. We're taking a look at Flight 93. And we're doing this with the benefit of hindsight. We're doing this slowly, carefully, and teasing out the analysis on all of this. And I must say that, you know, I'm sure for a lot of people it is slightly confusing because we're dealing with such a massive detail. This is what I outlined last year in the audio about the orgy of evidence, that what they hope to do is have so much stuff out there that you can't tell which are the important bits. One of the most important tasks for us is to weed out the information which is pure red herring disinformation or claims that simply can't be substantiated about the attacks, and get down to the core elements of it. And that's something that I encourage you all to participate in the 9/11 3i investigation. If you haven't done so already, just go to that section in the forum and please do have a read of what's there and put your 10 cents into it, please. And already I think we have made some progress in a couple of areas. One is in relation to, for example, the dust cloud which was produced when the towers collapsed, and the claims which have been made that the sheer size of the dust cloud was inexplicable except had there been explosives in the building. and that's now looking like a weaker case. Thing is, we've got to concentrate on the stuff that we can stand over, that stands up to analysis. And the other thing that's been the most interesting aspect for me is the whole issue of controlled demolition. Now, controlled demolition, of course, is the name of the company who were given the contract to clean up the World Trade Center. And controlled demolition is also what a guy called Van Romero spoke about in the days just after the 9/11 event, that he thought there had been a controlled demolition. And he later retracted that and said that on second thoughts it wasn't. But it came up again there. And believe it or not, it also came up in relation to the 7/7 bombings in London, when a van was seen in front of the bus that was blown up in London on that day, a van which was owned, bore the logo of, anyway, of Kingstar, which is a controlled demolition company in the United Kingdom. So why the focus on controlled demolition? Why is controlled demolition so in your face? What is it that they're trying to achieve with seeding the thought of controlled demolition right from the get-go with the 9/11 issue? And I think that what they're trying to achieve is this. They're trying to sucker us in to the controlled demolition only. They're trying, and it was part of the plan from the very beginning, that they would attempt to reduce the entire mass of evidence about the 9/11 event and what happened just before it and what happened after it and what went on in the day, to reduce it all to the question of whether you could or couldn't prove that there were explosives in the building which took the buildings down. Try and boil it all down to that issue. And that's an issue where they've got engineering experts, NIST reports, 9/11 Commission report, the whole panoply of expert official opinion ranged against you. So it's very hard ground upon which to win. So if they can divert you into focusing on the controlled demolition issue, and if you can't win, well, then you're sunk, aren't you? I don't want to do a deep analysis of the 3i investigation because it's ongoing and everybody hasn't contributed their opinion yet and we're only halfway through. But I just want to get that much on the record in terms of what's going on with this whole controlled demolition issue. The idea is that it's to be a booby trap for us, a dead end for us. So let's just be careful of that. There's a lot more to the 9/11 issue and to the valid suspicions and concerns and convictions of those who disbelieve the official story than merely the controlled demolition issue. So maybe you would add your voice to our investigation and lend your brain to our investigation. And if you feel there are topics that we're not covering yet that are important to cover, then there is a section there in the investigation where you can suggest other topics which the investigation should look into. And I hope you'll do that. Meanwhile, in relation to the new 9/11, as the song says, don't believe the hype. This is where it's at, folks. This tiny little breakfornews.com and its forum with, what is it now, 250 members and a few thousand people who come every week to the website. This is it, folks. Despite all the hype and the hoopla coming out of the CIA fakes, this is where the independent investigation of 9/11 is taking place. This is all we got, folks. And we're determined to keep it up because the truth will come out. Don't forget, by the way, that we do need your support. There is a PayPal button on the homepage of breakfornews.com, and you can also go into the support us section of the website. You'll see a link to that on the homepage, and you can support us through PayPal or through our subscription service, which works through tocheckout.com. If you have already supported us, thank you. Without that, we wouldn't be here. If you haven't, please do. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. Every little helps. And if everybody gives a little, then that keeps the show going here, folks. And speaking of show, that's it for this one. I will be back with more, and I do hope that you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
You always keep me warm, home is safe and away from home. I keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you always keep me warm? Home is safe and away from home. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.
Walking into the sun.